Hello and welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call. My name is Peter and I'm normally not the host, as you probably are well aware of. But Søren, you are normally the host and you're still on the line. You're just calling in remote, and so it's good you're here. I hope you're doing well, because we're going to talk about a lot of exciting things. It's going to be a big week coming ahead.
Thank you, Peter. And yeah, thank you for taking the intro. Since I am not in the studio today, I'm calling in, as you say, remote, and usually you would not even be here for this Monday episode. Full disclosure, we're shooting it Friday afternoon, but you are stepping in instead of Charu, because I couldn't be there Monday. So now we have to do it this way. And as always, it's a pleasure talking to you about all of these things, Peter. And when I say all of these things, I really mean that there are a lot of stuff to both talk about in terms of what happened last week on the macro scene, but also what's happening here in the coming week, and that is across the board, US, Europe, and Asia, and also a pretty hefty geopolitical angle. So I think we should just jump into it, Peter. If we start with last week, we saw EU and UK inflation figures, and they were more or less on point, at least in terms of analyst expectations. But what do you take away from those numbers?
Well, especially the UK inflation numbers, I think hinted a little bit that there are upside risks to inflation. And we know that, you know, inflation dynamics have been strong in the US and ticked higher over the past five months. I don't know whether we'll get the same dynamics and strength in Europe, maybe a little bit less so, but I don't see the inflation just going down as the ECB is projecting from now. I think there is a lot of uncertainties. There are the upside risk from energy and commodities due to geopolitics, and then there is just generally the strong US economy, but then also Europe picking up in terms of growth in some key Asian markets. So I think it's going to be super, super interesting to see whether the market will change its pricing and whether the ECB will deliver on that expected rate cut in June. They have been communicating it pretty many times, but whether they eventually will deliver, time will tell.
And it really seems like inflation in general is something that's dictating markets at the moment. We also saw Japanese inflation numbers. Is that something to take note of, also seen in the light that they have this interest rate decision coming up on Thursday, or how do you view that?
Yeah, the inflation number in Japan is interesting because it's a country that is very export-driven, so they also import a lot of things and their currency is weakening a lot. So I think the Bank of Japan is willing to adopt a very unusual monetary policy for as long as possible, unless suddenly we have an inflation problem. And that could be something that is slowly emerging in Japan. I think it's too early to call. There's still deflationary factors or dynamics in Japan, but certainly it's not the same Japanese economy as we had 10 years ago. There's a lot of things have happened since Shinzo Abe, former prime minister, launched his Abenomics, which has now become full circle, and Japan's economy in nominal terms at least is accelerating. And I think it's worth also talking into the Fed speakers, because there was a lot of Fed speakers last week, and a lot of those speeches hinted on the margin at maybe only one rate cut, or actually it's quite likely that we will not get a rate cut in the US. So, and that is super interesting, because we're going to talk about potential FX interventions in the dollar against Asian currencies later in this podcast. So super interesting. And then there's the whole question, Søren, about the geopolitics.
Yes, and let's go there now, because as you say, we're going to talk FX and US dollar a little bit later, but obviously we saw the Iran escalation versus Israel. We also, just this Friday morning, Europe time, woke up to Israeli retaliation. So obviously a lot is going on in the Middle Eastern region, and it also seems in terms of the Ukraine-Russian conflict that maybe the Republicans in the U.S. are starting to turn around and considering at least increasing their support. I mean, we had quite a few discussions last week about it, where the conclusion more or less was that, as you very intelligently said Tuesday, that given that geopolitics is sort of an unquantifiable uncertainty, it's very difficult to put into the markets, although there is, of course, some kind of risk premium, but still probably inflation and interest rates, as well as earnings, will be the dominating players in terms of dictating markets. Is that still the way you see it, or have we seen something that means that geopolitics will take over?
I think geopolitics plays a very important role in the long-term trajectory of where world affairs are going from here. In the short term, it's very obvious that every time we have a flare-up in geopolitics, just like with the Iran and Israel attack against each other, you see a positive response in energy markets and in European defense stocks. So those are definitely some of the two components you should consider for your portfolio to get a little bit better robustness against the geopolitics. I think on the Iran and Israel question, I think it's pretty clear that first you had the Iran attack, very well flagged in advance. They showed their capabilities with drone swarms and missiles, and Israel could show the world that, hey, we have a superior surface-to-air multi-layered defense system. And then everyone was really pleading to Israel, don't counterattack. And then Israel did it. The first reaction was pretty dramatic, almost 2% down in equities. And it was because that when the news hit the wire, they immediately became clear that Israel had targeted the region where Iran has its nuclear facilities. So that increasingly added a lot of risk to it. It obviously became very clear that no damage was done to the nuclear facilities. But at the same time, Iran's air defense was very poor, was scrambling to say the least. So I think Iran initially showed what it can do, and then Israel showed, hey, you have a very poor air defense, and we are able to strike deep into your country against your nuclear facilities if necessary. So now both sides have shown their cards, and then hopefully it can de-escalate from here, but time will tell. And then you correctly said on Trump, and this was already flagged a couple of days ago by Mike Pence, his former vice president, where he said that Trump was turning around and the GOP leader, Mike Johnson, also actually want to do something on Ukraine. And I think Trump, quote unquote, said on his Truth social media that, you know, Ukraine's existence is important for the US. And then that was sort of the positive quote for an Ukraine perspective. But then he also, you know, doubled down on his attack on Europe, saying Europe needs to do more. Please get together, act together, Europe, and move faster on this. And then, so basically, it seems like a Trump that is pivoting a little bit here on the on this new geopolitical age.
And obviously, that U.S.-Trump discussion is interesting, also in relation to the idea that we have an election coming up. So it's difficult to figure out how much is political spin and how much is actual action that they want to do. Warfare shouldn't be taken hostage by something like campaigning, but in the end, it probably is. Peter, let's focus on the coming week, because we also have quite a few things to talk about there. One is earnings, and I think we can let's look a little bit at it, but we'll also be in the studio together tomorrow doing an equity episode where this is obviously going to be the focal point unless something else happens. But we do have quite a few earnings coming out. For instance, a company like Meta on Wednesday. We have Microsoft and Alphabet reporting on Thursday. So really the heavy tech companies and also the heavy energy companies are coming out with ExxonMobil and Chevron on Friday. What are you paying attention to sort of on an overall level, and what's your expectation?
Well, it's going to be an interesting earnings season. And I think there are five earnings releases that are must watch because of their potential market impact. So it's Tesla tomorrow, Tuesday, and then it's Meta the day after on Wednesday. And then you have Caterpillar, Microsoft, and Google on Thursday. Those are the five major ones. And in particular, and then outside that, we have ASAP today. So probably by the time you hear this, ASAP, one of the largest software companies here in Europe, has already reported. We have Visa on the payment side tomorrow. We have General Electric tomorrow. And then some of the other European earnings on Thursday are Airbus and AstraZeneca. And then on Friday, we have the two major energy giants, oil and gas majors, ExxonMobil and Chevron. But I think if I was to pull out one stock that I'm really looking forward to, it's Tesla tomorrow. The stock price is down a lot from the peak 2.5 years ago, more than 60%. A lot of uncertainty around electric vehicles demand, now that interest rates are going to be higher for longer in the US. What will that mean to demand? There's a lot of trade friction, a lot of Chinese EVs being produced at ridiculously low prices because it's subsidized. That's, I think it's pretty evident. And a lot of those EVs are just sitting in ports here in Europe, talks about tariffs, etc. It's not a very easy environment to be navigating. And I think right now Tesla has lost sort of its, lost a little bit of its clout as being a technology company. It's increasingly been seen more and more, which is also the fact, it's a car company, most and foremost. So they need to get back to this narrative that it's a technology company that is here to change the future. And I think we can be pretty certain that Elon Musk will do a classical Elon Musk showmanship, where he will drum up the talk and excitement and in an anticipation against that early August big show where Tesla will unveil its robo taxi. They need to find the next growth narrative and so I'm really looking forward to that one.
Well, what you're saying, I mean, if we look at last week, a company like ASML had a pretty rough time with its earnings release. And we also had a company like Netflix reporting, for instance. And I mean, the general vibe last week wasn't that positive towards the earnings as such. What do you think that'll filter into to the, not obviously the absolute results of the report, because that won't change, but do you think it will have an effect on the way the markets react to these earnings reports?
Yeah, I'm smiling a little bit because I think we've been bang on in our quarterly outlook for the second quarter on earnings, right? We said Europe would do better than US. That has definitely been the case so far. We also acknowledge that technology is a strategic positive sector for us long term, but tactically in the second quarter we were actually negative. And I think that's proven to be right. I mean, valuations and thereby expectations had just simply been too high, and it's just very difficult because if you take an earnings like Netflix, right, they did extremely well against expectations, but then they said, well, the strong growth that we have just seen because we have clamped down on password sharing, that growth will come down now in the coming quarters, and that was the cue, and then that's the reason why the market was down. The shares were down at Netflix, and then you have ASML. They are having a temporary setback on orders. I'm really trying to paint a picture that that it was more or less expected, and the focus should be on the second half of and then really long term towards 2030, this massive trend in semiconductors. So I'm smiling a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a little bit more of this theme that the technology companies on their realized revenue and profits are doing well, but against the expectation when they put out their outlook, there might be some disappointments and further setbacks on the share price. So that's a theme, of course, we'll be watching.
I mean, I think the happiest people in the world are the ones that are able to celebrate their success and a small smile for being correct on something like earnings. I think that is true, and I think it's well deserved, Peter. So you can smile all through the weekend until Monday, and then we will have to see if you're also correct in the coming week. Peter, let's move to macro figures. There's also quite a few. On Tuesday, we had the preliminary PMI numbers for both the Eurozone and the US. Wednesday, we have the IFO figures, and Thursday, we have Q1 GDP, so-called advanced figures for the US. And Friday, we have this important inflation number, PCE, which is also from the US, I should say. What are you paying the most attention to? Is all of it equally important, or are you paying attention to one or the other?
I think the PMI figures from Europe and the IFO, which is a survey of 9,000 business leaders, are the ones I'm looking at, because the macro momentum right now is on the side of Europe. Bundesbank said last week as well that that their first quarter is looking like the German economy was growing again. So a lot of positive green shoots. We talked about that in one of our recent podcasts, Søren. So that a confirmation of that trend. That's what I'm looking for. And then obviously, you know, PMIs in the US could bolster the no rate cut narrative and price that even in even more. So and then of course the Friday's PCE, that's really one of the big ones because it's the official inflation figure. We have a lot of evidence that inflation picked up. So the expectation is that the PCE core year on year is up for March relative to February. And again, the PCE number is always coming late, but it is the one the official one. So let's see what it shows and how the market reacts to it. But that, I think that's the macro menu. I think the Q1 GDP advance figures for the US on Thursday is not typically something that I pay a lot of attention to because you have so many high frequency time series that already have made the market pretty well aware of where things are going. So I think these GDP reports are increasingly becoming less and less relevant, at least from a market interpretation point of view.
So just on an overall level, it seems like earnings will probably trump macro figures in the coming week, unless, of course, something big happens.
Absolutely.
All right, Peter. I think let's go to Asia before we end this episode, because we had this rumors. I guess it was almost about this potential Chinese FX intervention, sort of the government stepping in and aiding, or the Bank of China stepping in to aid the Chinese currency relative to like, I think it was both the Japanese yen and also the US dollar. Could you just lay out a little bit about what does this even mean and what are the implications of it?
Well, I think it all has an epicenter with the Japanese yen. So the unusual monetary policy of the Bank of Japan means a couple of things. So the Japanese yen has declined significantly against the Chinese currency, which makes China worse off competitiveness in global manufacturing markets. That's a big issue for China because it's not a consumption-driven economy, but an export-driven economy. The weak yen as well means another thing. It's used as a funding source in global markets, but it also means that the weak yen means that there's one less liquid currency to absorb a lot of the global flows. And that's why everything is flowing into the dollar and it's, you know, making the dollar, I think, the strongest. I think the dollar spot was the strongest in 34 years last week. And you have had a lot of policymakers, South Korea, China, Vietnam was the latest one, basically saying that, you know, we are getting closer to an FX intervention. The whisper and the rumor is that the U.S. government has actually approved that. So it seems like we're moving towards some coordinated FX intervention. And it just seems like a lot of the FX, what's happening in FX, especially around the dollar, the yen, and Asia, is out of balance. We need to find a new, more healthy equilibrium because it's also forcing China to dump prices aggressively on their exports, which is making people very mad in Washington and Brussels, and it increases the risk of significant pushback with more tariffs, and then we are in a very negative spiral if we get to that point. So something has to give here, and I don't have the full answers of how that type of intervention, how it will look like. I don't think I'm smart enough to anticipate that. But some type of thing will happen. And I think also that's one of the reasons why gold have been performing as well as it has. It's not only a geopolitical hedge. It's most certainly also something related to an intervention in the FX market. And then that means as well that the very late night, at least here in European time, you know, the Bank of Japan rate decision there is super interesting because it as I said, the Japanese yen and the Bank of Japan is the epicenter of this huge imbalance that we have in global FX markets. So as you can hear, there's a lot of things going on in the world. It's not going to be a boring week. So a lot of action.
A lot of action. And it is not 100% sure, so I can't promise it fully. But the way that everything looks, Chao and I will do this week's thematic episode about this Chinese FX intervention, and also probably weave in, as you say, gold, which is also relevant to this discussion, and talk a little bit about how those things work and what the market implications are. Peter, just before we leave, I just want to give a shout out to this article you wrote not too long ago, because as you can hear, there are a lot of things that can happen, and I think a general consideration is, do you have a portfolio that's set up to stand against some of these more or less positive things that are going on around the world, especially in terms of geopolitical uncertainty? You did a piece about that, so something around weathering the storm or something like that. Could you just give a quick rundown of that article, just so we can tell people that they should go and have a look at it if they are wanting to have some inspiration for how to protect their portfolio?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the article was basically just on the back of the Iran-Israel tit-for-tat attacks and what's going on in the hotspots of Ukraine and Taiwan. And we basically just said that, you know, the world is not the same as before, both before the pandemic, most certainly, but also even more certainly the sad invasion of Ukraine by an aggressive actor like Russia. And the big question is, so the 60-40 portfolio, the 60% in equities and 40% in bonds, worked well for 40 years when we had even, you know, lower and lower inflation, and we had more and more peace, the breakdown of the Berlin Wall, the peace dividend, China being absorbed in the global economy, all this. And that has ended. We are definitely in a new geopolitical era, as has been repeatedly said by politicians from around the world. And the question we ask in that note is just, is your portfolio ready to weather a new geopolitical era? And some of the components we highlight are, you know, commodities and gold typically respond pretty well to these things. Do you have exposure to military, because military spending is on the rise? We talk about inflation protected bonds. What was the last thing we were talking about? And then we talked about the different sectors where it makes sense. What are the defensive sectors, but also what are some of the sectors and regions that could do well? What do you do about emerging market equities, etc.? So it's a pretty wide ranging. So go have a look. It's on the platform. It's also on home.saxo under inspiration. So but Søren, I think I will. I think I'll do the outro today. So there's a lot of things happening this week, as you can hear. And just to sum up, focus on the geopolitics, how it impacts the portfolio. Think about that energy and gold component. Earnings, the key ones, Tesla tomorrow, Meta on Wednesday, Caterpillar, Microsoft, and Alphabet on Thursday. And then we have the IFO, and we have the PMIs in Europe and the US. We have the PCE on Friday. We have the Bank of Japan late Thursday night. And then we have this potential FX intervention in the Asian currencies against the dollars. So a lot of interesting things. It's not going to be boring, but please keep safe out there, and we'll be back again. Thank you for listening.